listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, the best radio station you'll ever hear.
Coming up next is Ecologic at 6 a.m. right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org.
You want to taste freedom, peace in this life? I believe we can make it whole again. I believe we can make it whole.
They paved paradise, put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on polluting the earth, tell me where we gonna plant our seeds. It makes me wanna cry for the children. Makes me wanna cry for Mother Earth. Makes me wanna cry for the children. Makes me wanna cry.
Did they ever hear of solar power? Ever see? We could do, there's so much we could know if we listen to the earth.
You can join us for Ecologic at 6 a.m. Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Shelley Gillard.
And I'm Donna Stein. And this is a two-hour Ecologic Earth Day special at 6 a.m. for April 22nd, 2023.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Today is the Earth Day that is acknowledged by mainstream society, but we know Earth Day is every day. Bob Henley of the WBAI program, What's Going On, is with us today as a guest co-host. I won't be able to be here for the entire program, unfortunately, but I think Bob can fill in for me just fine. Along with several other guests, we will show how energy, transport, and labor intersect with issues such as the East Palestine derailment, Holtec's radioactive wastewater dumping, the Cop City deforestation and police militarization in Atlanta, and of course, corporate greenwashing of Earth Day.
We try to start every show with good news. That Earth Day is being celebrated by so many, even mainstream media in a superficial way, is a testament to the work of many, to everyone's deep connection to nature. Many of our younger listeners know the first Earth Day in 1970 only as history. It was a combination of things that inspired the original Earth Day. Rachel Carson's 1962 book, Silent Spring, and the intention it got in Congress was part of it. Activism against the Vietnam War taught people how to be political activists and influence corporations, local governments, and national governments. The Earthrise photo taken in 1968 by Bill Anders in Apollo 8 brought the fragility of Earth into people's consciousness. In 1969, a massive oil spill sent about 100,000 barrels of oil into the water and onto the beaches of Santa Barbara, California. It was the largest spill of its kind up to that time. That same year, the Cuyahoga River catching fire because of pollution made national news and was a major wake-up call to the nation at large. In 1970, students established an Earth Week that grew into the first Earth Day. John McConnell, who created the Earth Flag, worked with the United Nations to get them to establish an Earth Day on the first day of spring. When I met John in the early 80s, he was trying hard to get credit for creating Earth Day and was very disappointed that the day was changed from the first day of spring to April 22nd.
When we were putting the show together, Ken, you said something interesting about clouds and science fiction art.
Oh, yeah. In science fiction art before the Earthrise photo of 68, drawings and paintings of Earth from space never included clouds because people didn't think clouds would be visible from space.
The country was changing, and the environment was becoming as important an issue as Vietnam and civil rights. The Clean Water Act and Clean Air Act and Safe Drinking Water Act passed Congress and were even signed by a conservative president, Richard Nixon, who caved to public pressure. The environment was a bipartisan issue back then. It became partisan only when Ronald Reagan was in office and made controversial appointments, including Ann Gorsuch at the Environmental Protection Agency and James Watt as Secretary of the Interior. When environmentalists called James Watt a fox guarding the hen house, he embraced it and put a picture of a fox in his office.
Some people thought of Earth Day as a one-time thing, but environmental catastrophes kept getting into the news. After Earth Day, environmental disasters and problems that only made local news before were making national news. Oil spills, smog, endangered species, for example. In 1978, revelations about the toxic Love Canal galvanized communities to agitate for a healthy environment.
In Pennsylvania in 1969, State Representative Franklin Curry introduced into the House of Representatives the country's first Green Amendment, which was passed in 1971. Its first major use was in 2013, when it was used to overturn the state legislature's attempt to open every municipality in the state to fracking. There are movements to pass green amendments in many states in the nation, with Montana having been the second state in 1972, and New York just last year being the third. Check the current status of such amendments across the nation at www.forthegenerations.org. Also from www.forthegenerations.org comes the good news that Connecticut has proposed a green amendment. This is the third Ecologic episode in a row that we have something to praise Connecticut about.
Coming up is Sharon Abreu's The Balance from the Penguins on Thin Ice Climate Change Musical Review CD. We played a song from it last week. The Balance from Penguins on Thin Ice. We played it because we're about to talk about the balance of nature, a threat to it, and a victory for it.
Horseshoe crabs are what is called an indicator species. That is a species that illustrates the health of an entire ecosystem. Canaries were used as an indicator species when they were carried into coal mines to reveal the presence of toxic gases, giving rise to the phrase canary in the coal mine. However, in nature, indicator species are usually top predators, such as spotted owls, wolves, and cougars, because their presence indicates that the prey's foods are present. Invasive species can also be indicators. An example is the invasive reed Phragmites, which replaces cattails when there is too much pollution. A species at the base of the food chain, such as horseshoe crabs, is another example of the many species on which we rely to indicate the state of an ecosystem.
When I became a birder and majored in oceanography in college, I learned how important horseshoe crabs are in their ecosystem. Their eggs are a crucial food source for fish, sea turtles, and migrating shorebirds. Shorebirds in most parts of the world migrate in April and May at the same time that woodland birds do, timed with the length of daylight. On the East Coast, shorebirds time their migration with when horseshoe crabs lay their eggs. The Horseshoe Crab Recovery Coalition has articles on horseshoe crabs and their importance. www.hscrabrecovery.org. That's hscrabrecovery.org. Horseshoe crabs did fine until commercial fisheries started using them for bait and pharmaceutical companies used their blue copper-based blood to test vaccine safety, most recently in the creation of the COVID-19 vaccine. U.S. companies still use horseshoe crab blood, but companies in Europe and Asia have switched to using a synthetic ingredient that does not require horseshoe crabs to be captured or bled.
But there is some good news for horseshoe crabs. Dozens of critical habitat areas for threatened shorebirds will be protected after a U.S. District Court in Charleston handed down an order prohibiting three groups from harvesting horseshoe crabs on several of South Carolina's beaches this season. Recently, an order signed by United States District Court Judge Richard Mark Gergel pauses horseshoe crab harvesting on nearly 30 beaches in South Carolina. The order lasts through the spawning season, which began on March 15th and ends on June 15th. The beaches listed have been identified by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the State Department of Natural Resources as critical habitat areas for red knots. Catherine Wanamaker, an attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center, said, "It is the most significant kind of protection for red knots and horseshoe crabs that's ever been put in place on the eastern seaboard."
We spoke to Sam Payson of Friends of Liberty State Park, which still supports the DEP plan, which was going to be exhibited at a DEP open house on March 23rd. On March 18th, DEP Commissioner Sean LaTourette strongly and clearly rejected this destructive sports and entertainment complex plans of billionaire Paul Fireman and his funded surrogates. The governor, stuck in Fireman's bubble, responded by canceling the open house. To his credit, the commissioner was not bullied by Fireman's gang and released the task force summary report and slides showing the plans on the originally scheduled date.
The original DEP plan, in response to public comments, includes ball fields for free active recreation, passive open space for rest and relaxation, and the restoration of shuttle buses for getting through the large park without a car. However, Paul Fireman, owner of the luxury golf course next to the park, is still making trouble, with slick campaigns designed to raise questions about the DEP plan and push for development of commercial venues for crowd and traffic-generating athletic and concert events, events that can well be accommodated in other local areas and that are completely inappropriate for what is, in effect, Jersey City's equivalent to New York City's Central Park, a park with free open space, recreation, and natural areas. From the Friends of Liberty State Park, quote, "We strongly condemn the park-destroying commercial venues plan pushed by billionaire oligarch Paul Fireman, his high-priced lobbyists, two funded front groups, and other funded surrogates for two stadiums, a hockey arena, and a commercial concert venue. Their exclusionary, admission-based, unpreventable traffic-jamming commercial venues plan trashes the DEP's plans and ignores 46 years of overwhelming majority public consensus opposing commercialization and privatization."
There are two fake grassroots campaigns. Ironically, one is called Liberty State Park for All. an absurd Orwellian name when they are pushing for the currently free park to be infiltrated with expensive event venues. For more information, go to www.folsp.org and consider attending Friends of Liberty State Park's annual fundraising gala.
We'll be talking with our guest, Priscilla Grimm, about the Atlanta forest that is being destroyed for Cobb City. Priscilla was down there. But first, we'll let Ann Feeney herself introduce Have You Been to Jail for Justice?
The only way they're going to hear us is if we take to the streets. And I know there are a lot of you here who have some experience doing that, so I think you can testify with me. We have wonderful free speech rights in this country as long as we exercise those rights ineffectively. If our conduct might actually affect the outcome of anything, it's amazing how quickly we can be surrounded by police and paddy wagons. And so I decided if I was going to make a career out of this activism thing, I should have a song we could sing on our way to jail. Was it Cesar Chavez? Maybe it was Dorothy Day. You're in good company. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine. You law-abiding citizens, listen to this song. Can be wrong, so wrong. Once unions were against the law, but slavery was fine. Women were denied the vote, and children worked the mine. The more you study history, the less you can deny it. A rotten law stays on the books, do folks like us defy it? Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand.
That was Ann Feeney singing, Have You Been to Jail for Justice? We'll be hearing from Priscilla Grimm and today's special guest co-host, Bob Henley, in just a few minutes. Special thanks to Charlie Olson of the Environment TV for helping to get the recorded portion of our show ready for you. You're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Ken Gale. And before you hear from Bob Henley and Priscilla Grimm, and we take your phone calls for them, a very important thing that we and all producers need to do on each show is appeal to you to help keep this radio station on the air.
Ecologic serves you and the community with many environmental stories about issues that affect our health and well-being. We can't do it without you. WBAI continues only because of listeners like you, and we have to ask for your help, or how will you know what we need? Ecologic brings you actions you can take, rallies, marches, direct actions, letters, emails, petitions, concerts, webinars. It's all important. Not all of us can get to every action, but there are many ways to support. and that includes supporting WBAI and Ecologic so we can continue to bring you activists, journalists, eyewitnesses, and more, along with environmental music and artists. Please donate to WBAI and say that you are donating in the name of Ecologic. Even better, become an Ecologic BAI buddy. Call 212-209-2950.
Ecologic supports every environmental issue, so a donation to us is like supporting many groups at the same time. We talk about actions, seminars, lobbying efforts, and more. Help us to keep community groups get the word out.
What we call the environment is not some abstract thing. It's the air we breathe and the water we drink, the creatures with whom we share this planet. Indigenous folks acknowledge them all as relatives.
WBAI has been involved in every political and social struggle, including the climate crisis. We really hope that you will help WBAI and the Pacifica Network. You're hearing us now because listeners like you pitched in. You listen to Ecologic, so be part of it. Annual membership in WBAI is just $25, so join us as a voting member or even better, as a sustaining member, BAI buddy, for $10, $15, or more a month. Just make any donation today. Let us know that you're listening and that you care about Ecologic and WBAI. Support your show. Call 212-209-2950.
Ken has been hosting Ecologic on BAI for more than 20 years, so we have covered lots of environmental topics, and some of our most popular past shows have been made into DVDs and CDs that we offer as thank you gifts to our donors. On the website ecologic.wbai.org, we have more than 25 items from which you can choose. They make great gifts, as well as treats for yourself. Or maybe you could find just $10 a month or more to be a sustaining BAI buddy. But any donation to WBAI in the name of Ecologic is truly appreciated.
If you prefer not to donate online or through the call center, you can send a check or money order for your membership or premiums. The mailing address is WBAI Radio, Attention Membership, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. That's 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, 11217.
Okay, and now I think we have Bob Henley on the line, our special co-host for today.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, that's excellent. Nice to hear you.
Yes. So, welcome. Please introduce yourself to our guests, and I think Priscilla's been called.
Excellent. So it's not Monday morning, but I normally am on these airwaves at 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. Indeed, it is an extra credit Saturday. And I can't tell you how honored I am to be in your company. I have been listening for Ecologic, not every session, but a fair number, to know that you guys have had your fingers on the pulse of what's going on locally, bioregionally, nationally, and it's great to be here, and I can't wait to be part of what you've got in store for listeners today.
That was great, Bob. Thanks. And Priscilla?
Read the email I sent you.
Not on the air.
Oh. So that's that kind of conversation that's happening behind the scenes and then strangely in front of the scenes.
Yeah, before we get to Priscilla, Bob, tell us a little bit about your work with getting the East Palestine derailment.
Sure, absolutely. I'm fortunate in at this point. I'm involved with a great collective, Work Bites, with Joe Maniscalco and Steve Wishnia, and Tim Sherd of Hardball Press. We've all been around the block a bit. Still have a lot of high energy when it comes to writing about working issues, people, the stuff that people are facing every day, both in the region and really across the country. We don't have any corporate sponsors. So when we see something that deserves greater attention and focus, we jump on it. And then I also write for Insider NJ, another progressive place to get thoughts and ideas. And then, of course, my stuff is syndicated through Salon. And so through that, I'm able to reach a lot of people. And in the case of what happened with East Palestine, I worked on the railroad at one point in my lost youth. And the Erie Lackawanna Railroad, it went out of business, but it's not my fault nor my family's fault because I was from a railroad family. And I noticed very soon when they announced the way this was going down that the initial releases about the information were all framed pretty much by the company or the government, which it spectacularly failed the workers and the residents of East Palestine. So in those initial reports, I noticed that we did not have any feedback or comment from the railroad workers. And really, with the exception of a good job by a local public radio station, not much from the community. And so I jumped in there. I have good contacts in the rail unions over their struggle of being forced back to work by President Biden and a Democratic Congress. You may remember that dust up. Right. And that was where the president forced him to go back to work after a majority of them rejected a contract with the greedy rail operators. They forced them back. It didn't have any, there was no sick time in the contract. And so through my work with the railroads unions, I was able to get their voices on this conversation. And as a consequence, I do feel that between the Railroad Workers United, a wonderful group, and our efforts, we were able to, within 72 hours, get the conversation recentered on workers and the tremendous damage done to the community and still being done to the community by this Norfolk Southern, which is just one of seven of these greedy enterprises that have been getting away with murder for too long.
And they managed to get something passed that unions cannot speak to the press, or they will be taken away from the Federal Transportation Board.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's been right. That's a standing rule that has to do with the kind of quasi-judicial hearing that the National Transportation Safety Board has. And that's been a long-standing rule. And it, in some ways, as someone who is on a local board of adjustment in town, local municipal land use board at one point, I understand it is a quasi-judicial body. And so what you have to do, though, is have sources in the railroad union movement that are maybe one step removed from the actual union representing the person who is. And so that's how it's done. But one of the things that's so important here is that I found such connection because, remember, the EPA and the state regulators, despite the fish kill of thousands of fish that were reported almost instantly after the vinyl chloride release, was saying that everything was safe and you could go back to life as normal. And so what I found that resonated with me was all of my work related to the great 9/11 caper, where the EPA, with an eye towards Wall Street, back in the Bush administration, said the air was safe to breathe. And now I've spent, I guess, close to a decade of my life, much of it at the chief leader, the civil service paper for the city of New York, documenting all the people. We've now lost more people to the occupational exposure on 9/11, the actual event itself. And so this skepticism, informed by life experience and tragically death, is getting a kind of momentum and I think is now beginning to force more accountability. It's too bad, though, that people have had to pay so dearly to get it.
For sure.
Yeah, I've been comparing what happened in East Palestine, Ohio, to the fire at the Hiawatha River in 1969 in Cleveland that got people thinking about the environment in a way they never had before. And certainly that train wreck got them thinking about a lot of things. And it fits in with what's going on in Atlanta, Georgia, with they're destroying forest and killing environmentalists in order to build that. And we have Priscilla Grimm on the line, and she was down there. Please tell us what was going on down there and why you went there.
Hello, how are you? So an environmental activist, Torchy Vita, was killed. It was revealed shot over 57 times. In the forest of Atlanta. It was with the Stop Cop City movement. Atlanta's trying to build a a police training center, which is only going to train police in to be further militarized and violent. And that, and I heard about the Stop Cop City movement last year and have been following it. And when I heard about, one, the murder of Tortu Vita, and then they called for a week of action for people to come and camp in the forest. And I said, of course, why wouldn't I, you know, choose to walk in solidarity with the people of Atlanta? You know, they had 2 days of public testimony to the city council, largely rejecting the project of Stop Cop City, and still it went forward. So I showed up with my tent in March.
Right. Yeah. We know you through Occupy here in New York. You have roots in Atlanta, right? So it was personal to you.
I do. Yeah, I do. I was born in Atlanta. I grew up between there and Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Both sets of my grandparents lived in Atlanta. You know, it's interesting just thinking back on my history. One of my best memories was with my grandfather going to the Stone Mountain Lake. There's a lake in front of Stone Mountain. And that was open to the public in the 60s, and it's been closed now because it was overused and completely ruined. It's like overrun with bacteria and whatnot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the land management of the settler colonial state. This is not good. Which is why we need to, you know, make sure that land back actually happens in our lifetime.
Yeah.
Tell us about some of the people you met in Atlanta.
So, you know, it was really wonderful the few days that I was actually at Stop Cop City. It really felt like the beginning days of Occupy, which is interesting since, you know, this is a movement that's been going on for 2 years. They've been actually in the forest and doing this. And, when I say the first couple of weeks of Occupy, I mean, just like, you know, the people whom I met were some of the most deeply serious and committed activists, but at the same time had such a sense of play and humbleness, and just, it's wonderful.
Cool.
Hey, Kane, could I ask a question?
Go ahead.
Yeah. So it's such a great opportunity to connect with you, Priscilla. Can you talk about, as someone that's really media savvy and gets a sense of the national rhythm and the regional way of stories laid out, what do you think that people that are just following it through mainstream media, what do they need to know? What are some of the things that we're not maybe getting if unless we're tapped into Democracy Now, but if in terms of the mainstream press, where is the misrepresentations you think we need to pay attention to?
So the biggest thing is, one thing that's interesting is that The Daily Show has available online two amazing segments about Stop Cop City and the problem of Cop City. I recommend that people check that out. The other thing to really understand is that the people of Atlanta rejected this project in 2 days of public testimony to city council, and yet it still went through. Like, this is clearly a case of, you know, corporate manipulation of local politics. The other thing to really understand is that, you know, this is a black neighborhood that the Cop City would go into, and none of them want it there. Mm-hmm. Like, this is literally Black Lives Matter, because the people, you know, most of the people in Atlanta jails, they're black people of Atlanta. And, you know, Cop City is only going to figure out more ways to brutalize people and to put them into the system. That is one of the biggest things. The other thing is to understand that, you know, these charges of domestic terrorism are super interesting, since nobody who actually stormed the Capitol had been on the January 6th attack. None of them have been charged with domestic terrorism. Right. And this, you know, this pushback saying that, you know, the people who are out camping in the forest, they're outside agitators. Well, this training center is designed in the plans for it to train police squads from other states. So they're planning on making money on the fact I'm bringing people from out of state to, quote unquote, train them.
There's about five different leads to stories that need to be done. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and this is in a forest, and Atlanta has generally been good about managing forests and appreciating how it cools their city, and yet somehow police brutality trumps all.
But have they been good about it if the Stone Mountain Beach is no longer suitable for human swimming?
You know, it's interesting that I used to visit Atlanta frequently because I'm a very good friend, Chris Kampanik, used to be there. And I saw articles in the paper about they wanted to make it a forest city, and they understood that it would save air conditioning costs and make people healthier. And it was very, very pro-forest. And I saw somebody wrote a letter to the paper complaining about pollen, and they said that you'll save a lot more. It's way better for your health than not having a tree. And it was, you know, they were making real obvious. This was years ago. And all of a sudden, now they're cutting down trees, and they're cutting down trees, you know, in neighborhoods that otherwise wouldn't have a park. It's gotten different. I don't know if the rest of the city is still pro-tree or what. You have two sets of rules, one for black people, one for white people. And exactly. I think this is showing really well, you know, take away a park for black people and leave the trees for white people. And everybody needs to be healthy.
Popped in my head is that one of the things, I noticed that when we had the George Floyd challenge across the country, that labor's response was interesting. We had unions like CW, SEIU come out fairly quickly and strongly, and other unions not so much. Is there any support coming? I mean, of course, George itself has its right to work vibe, but there are national unions, transportation unions. And I'm just wondering, is there any conversation within the union movement to support what's going on there in terms of, one, like you so eloquently raised, self-determination of the community and the question of the police industrial complex?
Yeah, the only union I've actually heard of that has condemned the project, which, you know, it needs to be condemned by unions because the structure, you know, is supposed is going to be built, you know, is going to touch union labor somewhere. The International Painters Union, I think, came out against it, saying that they would not consider working on it at all. But, you know, this is an issue. I mean, but you have UPS that has a union, and yet the corporation is one of the funders to Cop City. I mean, that's the other thing that people really need to know, is that this thing is being built by corporations. Norfolk Southern, who had the East Palestine chemical spill accident, derailment, they're one of the big funders.
So maybe a good idea here then, Priscilla, would be to have, because we know within the union movement that there are people that this is antithetical to, so we should probably give them support, lift them up, and make inquiry of the progressive people in those union circles.
Absolutely.
It's fascinating to hear the connection between, you know, East Palestine and Atlanta in still another way. That was very interesting that, you know, the the train company that caused that derailment that had fired everybody who used to work on that train, so that there was nobody to pay attention to when there was a problem for 20 miles. People have their cameras on their front doors, and the camera showed that train was having problems 20 miles before it derailed. And if there were people on that train working there, they would have known it. And it's the same kind of connection of, oh, never mind people, we just need to make money, and we don't care if people die as long as we make money. And that's a really messed up way to run a country. And yeah, that seems to
and
be
a railroad. And a railroad.
What a way to run a railroad, yeah. Priscilla, tell us more about the different corporations that are involved in Cop City. That's another angle that doesn't seem to be coming out very much.
Waffle House? I mean, it's just that. Like, Waffle House, really? Why? But it's all around the logistics of, you know, getting this thing built. These are all companies that have interest in moving lots of equipment and building a structure and then cementing it there, because then all of a sudden they have business, right? So
what can folks do to support the Cop City movement and to get involved?
So one of the organizations that they should look up is the Atlanta Solidarity Fund, and they should make sure to give a donation to the Atlanta Solidarity Fund, which is helping to fight charges and also support other ways of legal maneuvering to try and get the project stopped. Community Movement Builders in Atlanta is another tremendous organization that's been leading the fight against Cop City in the forest, and also Defend the Atlanta Forest is another website that I recommend that everybody follow. In New York City, there's a whole weekend happening right now of care. Tomorrow, Tochi Gita's birthday is going to be celebrated at Bank of America in Midtown. So people should come out to that.
Where Midtown?
Bank of America is at 42nd Street, near across the street from Bryant Park. Bank of America is one of the corporate funders behind Cop City. So
it's Bryant Park is 6th Avenue and 42nd Street.
Yes.
And now, could you give those three websites slowly so people can write them down?
Yes. So the Atlanta Solidarity Fund, Community Movement Builders, and Defend the Atlanta Forest.
And I understand there's also a call later in, I think later in May, for another week of action down in Atlanta. And what I saw was come for the week and stay for the summer. So
yes, exactly. Yes.
I'll put those websites on the Ecologic webpage eventually. there's a lot going on, and you know, I think that when they thought, we'll kill somebody and that'll scare everybody from being active. And it seems to have had the opposite effect. It's made people so angry.
Yes.
Usually does, Ken. Usually does.
Usually does. And they don't wake up to that. They're so arrogant. They think, we'll murder somebody and that'll stop people. And that doesn't happen. It never has.
Right.
Look at how much activity came out of the assassinations of Martin Luther King. I mean, it's murder doesn't have the effect that the murderers think it will. And if they studied history, they would know that. But, anyway. And also, I should mention that WBAI has a prison rights show on the count at 10 o'clock every Saturday. And I highly recommend people check that out. So you've got, you have David Rothenberg is from 8 to 10, and then you have the Prison Rights Show on the count, which is a wonderful show, one of the best free speech shows on WBAI. and it comes from a totally different angle than you'll have any other free speech show come from. They do a great job. They have politicians on. It's much more mainstream than you might think it is. A prison rights show, there's politicians on it? Yeah, there are.
Okay, but now we'd like to hear from you listeners. Call in with your questions or comments at 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. Our guests this hour, Bob Henley and Priscilla Grimm, have talked about East Palestine, Cop City, and how they relate to major problems in our society.
Yeah, there's,
by the way, the week of action that's being called for in Atlanta is from June 24th to July 1st.
Thank you.
Are you in contact with any of the people you were arrested with?
No, absolutely not.
Oh,
that's part of my bond condition.
Oh, part of your bond condition. So they don't want communication. I guess that figures,
no, they
doesn't
do not.
It?
It's a problem. Yes.
You're not talking about the coercive power of the state, are you?
Power. No, who we talk about? Terrible.
So the people building Cop City, for all their power, they are scared of people like Priscilla Grimm, who are willing to go down there and get arrested.
For what I wanted to ask, where are they in the construction?
That was not the idea, just to be clear. I was going down to camp.
Where are they in construction, just so we know? Where is the actual project? I've seen heavy equipment. What's the status?
I mean, it's just moving forward. I don't know the exact status, but it is moving forward right now as we speak, which is why it's so important that people actually show up in person in Atlanta.
The number to call to talk to Priscilla or Bob or Sally or I is 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. It's funny, being an environmentalist such a long time, I've seen this sort of activity by the ruling class, as it's called, over and over again. And we have two calls. So 212-209-2877, you are on the air.
Hi, it's Russ, and I want to join the punch bowl, if you know what I mean. As far as On the Count, that show, I've called a few times, and as far as prison rights, they don't want to address the rights of women in prison being forced to be housed with transgender people. They don't want to address that. But I have two questions for Bob and Priscilla. You know, Bob, congratulations on putting out PBA President Pat Lynch with your show with his successor. That was good work on your part.
That's not fair. I'm self-aggrandizing. But go ahead.
The next day, literally, after you did that interview. But Priscilla, it's very telling to me that you don't have a problem using police against domestic terrorists if they don't agree with you politically, okay? Those D.C. jails are filled with people who shouldn't be there. But, you know, I think that's a matter for self-examination. And also, black communities where black...
Russ, we can always rely on you to say make those wild opinions. Anyway, we have another call standing by, the 212-209-2877, and you are on the air. Hi, Daryl. Yeah.
Daryl McPherson, Bronx, New York.
Welcome.
And I really want to appreciate all of you all being there. And I'd like Priscilla to do two things. One, to give out her website, because my understanding is because of her unjust incarceration, she's lost her employment. And she needs money. Two, would you give a more thorough history of Tortuguita so that we can get some kind of an idea of who he was? And the original story is that he shot at the police. Sort of hard to do if there's absolutely zero gunpowder on your hand.
Yeah, right?
Tortuguita went by they pronouns.
Back up just a little bit. Tortuguita went by they pronouns. there are several interviews with Tortuguita from before, of course, they died, talking about their commitment to nonviolence. It's just ludicrous that they, you know, the charge that they shot at police, especially since the gun that was produced by Georgia Bureau of Investigation was a standard issue police rifle or a standard issue police handgun. And there has been no actual proof evidence brought forward to show that it belonged to Tortuguita at all. I mean, the police say that they have a registration, but where? Show it to us. It doesn't exist because they never had a gun.
Right. And supportpriscilla.org is the website to support Priscilla Grimm. It is amazing. And there's been plenty of video of showing a policeman going to his car, getting a gun, and then coming and shooting this or that suspect. So it's not like this isn't standard procedure, is to shoot somebody and then say that they were shooting back. It's just a lie. But they get away with it because the court says, oh, it's okay. Policemen never lie, so whatever they say, we'll go with. Oh, God.
And this is the result of, like, quote-unquote training. You know, the real solution to what we need in society right now is nothing to do with police. It's housing. It's Medicare for all.
Right.
It's all these things that we could pay for if we didn't have such a monstrous military and prison industrial complex.
Yeah.
And we have another caller standing by, 212-209-2877, and you are on the air.
Hi. So in the mornings, I will put Cop City in quotations and then put in YouTube. You have vision problems, like today and upload date, and I'll get the most recent stuff. And I find that the Atlanta television news covers the most recent stuff. So if you want to know whether or not 1 inch of Cop City has been built, you can go there. And there is, which is no. So these activists have been able to put this off and stop it from being built for 2 years now. So anybody who asks people when they're interviewing people, what are your chances? What do you really think, you know, the chances are that people can really stop Cobb City from being built? Well, I'd say pretty good. There's a lot of flooding.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then as far as one gun, somebody going to their car to get a gun, I haven't heard that. That's interesting.
There's YouTube videos on it. It's amazing. They're so arrogant that...
Yeah, like that. My friend says that's why they always keep an extra around. But, on the other hand, I did see an article from truthout.org that's got a lot of recent stuff. It does say if built, and there's a paragraph. It also says that Tortuguita was shot at least by multiple handguns and shotguns.
Right.
Over 50 times.
Yeah, like 50 gunshot wounds. So there's
as they were sitting cross-legged with their hands in the air.
Yeah, with their hands facing. Yeah, like as if they want to like cover their face. And you know what Daryl said about no gunpowder found is really really telling. And it's a cover up. It's a frame. If you look at the picture of the gun. There's no wounds on the actual gun. And the actual gun looks like it's framed. It's like in a frame. There's plastic, moldy white plastic on one side of it, and cigarette butts and leaves all arranged. Like the cops actually tried to be crafty when they took a picture of this gun. And then there actually is a, purchase. Document that I saw, but anything can be fabricated, so I don't believe
it. I fly all the time.
Thanks for that call. We have two more callers standing by. clearly what Priscilla and Bob have to say is resonating with a lot of people. The number is 212-209-2877. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks to Daryl for saying be nice to Russ because he contributes to the show, okay? A little indulgence, please.
Okay, one more call. 212-209-2877.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I don't do more intensive analysis of this in the next hour, but the Hudson River problem that we're beginning to have again, I hope you'll give the numbers of the people to call at the state level, including the governor, to make sure that this company, what is it, Hotech, does not get to pour 1 million gallons of tritium-laced water into the Hudson River. And I also wanted to know, and now it's becoming serious again, and I think Bob Henley might have some details on this. When the EPA was finally forced, and I think we can thank Robert Kennedy Jr. and Pete Seeger and the Riverkeeper and lots of New Yorkers and New Jerseyans for forcing the EPA, I don't know how that's done. How do you force the EPA to do their job and force GE to clean up the river? And what arrangements were made with GE? Because I gather they did not have any serious punitive damages, which should have been very, very serious. If all they had to do was clean up the mess they made, then there's no motivation not to do it again, because those 30 years they got to spend to invest all that money that they didn't spend on disposing of the PCBs properly, and they paid no price for this. Well, do you know, Bob, specifically if they paid a price or what?
Well, thank you for letting us promote the second hour of this two-hour special, because we'll be dealing with Holtech, and we'll also be dealing with communities in New Jersey who are working on climate issues. Jennifer Coffey is going to be full of good news in the second hour.
Can I just be responsive to the caller just a little bit,
Minute?
Okay. And so she raises a very important point, which is that what ends up happening is there's a slow walk to this thing. There's a level of community outrage. People get upset. It's in the local media. Local elected officials respond. And as far as EPA, what's essential is making sure that at the congressional delegation level, you are working your representative and your U.S. senator. And then the other thing here, and I'll just say this quickly because we're up against it in terms of the flip of the hour. One of the things that we have to revisit here is the fact that so much of environmental crime is in the civil arena. I mean, that's the other problem, is that like scofflaws when it comes to Amazon and Starbucks, that just for fun, for sport, there are law firms that specialize in violating labor law. They get paid hundreds of dollars per hour to do it. And so that's the other problem here, is that we need to actually make it so that this kind of environmental insult to humanity and to the planet becomes a criminal matter. That's the sanction that people pay attention to.
Yeah, and the fact that green amendments are starting to really pop up all over the country is another good sign. And the green amendments are being used. And it's important. Joel Kupferman of the National Lawyers Guild constantly talks about, we don't need new laws. We need to enforce the laws we already have.
Right.
And that is a big problem. The Environmental Control Board of New York City is owed billions of dollars from large building owners. That's billions with a B. And that money doesn't get collected, not by Mayor Adams, not by Mayor de Blasio, not by Mike Bloomberg. Nobody collects the money if it's a large landowner. If somebody owns one building, yeah, you have to pay your fine. But if you own lots of buildings, you don't have to.
Right. There's no better example than the Kushner Empire. And before, though, we lose Priscilla, I would like to offline connect with her. You guys are so great at networking, especially with the update from the caller about the status of the project. I'd like to learn more and do more reporting about the potential for unions working through who I'm not aware what the Project Labor Agreement might be involved there. It is a right to work state, to see if we can't get a more robust response of social conscience from the labor movement.
That would be wonderful.
Ecologic has been doing networking for the whole 21 years it's been on the air, and I love it. I'll have two or three guests on, and they're exchanging emails and phone numbers and everything else. It's wonderful what Ecologic continues to do, even when we're not broadcasting. And you just gave us another example. We have all these websites for people to connect to, and our website, ecoradio.org, has a ton of information for people to connect to. And, oh, my goodness, it's almost 7 o'clock. Priscilla, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you so much for what you've done for people.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yes. Glad to have you with us.
And so welcome to the second hour of WBAI's Ecologic Earth Day Special here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org.
This earth to share with everything that grows. Don't you want to taste freedom, peace in this life? I believe we can make it whole again. I believe we can make it a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot.
We could do, there's so much we could know if we listen to the earth.
And special guest co-host Bob Henley has brought us the guests for this hour. And before we hear from them, we have some event announcements for you. There are two opportunities to be heard about Holtec's plans to dump radioactive wastewater into the Hudson River on April 25th and 27th. Check our website for registration links.
Also, a rally to oppose Holtec's dumping of radioactive wastewater into the Hudson is on May 6th on the river at Cortlandt Park in Verplank, New York, just off Route 9 and south of Peekskill. Bring your kayak, though there will be people on land as well.
And it's going to be interesting because the movement to stop the dumping of radioactive wastewater in the Hudson is both Democrat and Republican. The bill to stop that from happening is sponsored by people from both parties. This is as bipartisan issue as the New York legislature has ever done. They so rarely have anything bipartisan. It's pretty neat. I hope join us on May 6th. Earth Month Convergence Weekend is being celebrated at the La Plaza Cultural Community Garden at the southwest corner of East 9th Street and Avenue C in the East Village, East 9th Street, Avenue C, today and tomorrow, April 22nd and 23rd, from 12 noon until 6 p.m., noon until 6, today and tomorrow. There will be talks and interactive activities, including herb walks and making seed bombs. That's a good thing. And presentations both in person and some on Zoom about land rights and environmental justice around the world.
Hey, and Ken, you have a busy day today. I look forward to hearing you tie together the peace and environmental movements at the Earth and Water Day celebration hosted by Paul Slatkus's Good News Planet in Times Square today from 11 to 12, Times Square 11 to 12. You'll be speaking about 1:20 or 1:30, I believe, televised live.
And next hey, Saturday,
Ken?
Yeah.
Oh, Ken, I you sound like a spontaneous group. I also just want to say, I just wanted to say that, lest we seem scripted, that we are having a very important rally at 1 p.m. at Bradley Park in Asbury Park here in New Jersey. You get to be by the ocean, and of course, the Asbury Park, the Austin of the Jersey Shore. There is a protest to support Gannett workers who've done such an important job at the Home News, Courier News, and Asbury Park Press. They're fighting the evil empire of Gannett, which is owns 1 in 5 local newspapers and has been gutting local newspapers, closing them down, as we know, as we heard, in a time of crisis, public health crisis, and climate crisis, local reporting is essential. And I don't think it's accidental that we've been through an insurrection and a pandemic because we don't share a common set of authenticated facts. So please, if you're down here or think you're taking a ride, come down here and support the brothers and sisters at the News Guild CWA. That's at Asbury Park at Bradley Park. It'll be a great, great show of support. Thanks.
Wow. And next Saturday, April 29th, is the New York City Labor Corps' Paul Robeson concert. Information is on their website, www.nyclc, right? NY City Labor Corps, nyclc.org. And Westpac has a memorial to its founder, Connie Hogarth, next Sunday, April 30th. See their calendar at westpac.org/events. Westpac, WESPAC.org/events. Our tribute to Connie was on March 4th, 2022. And next week we'll have people from the New York City Labor Corps on because we'll be using their premium as a using their CD as a premium. And now okay, let's now get let's to get our guests. Oh, go ahead, Tally.
Yeah, no, we're just asking Bob to please introduce our guests today.
Oh, sure. Well, of course, it's great. It's an honor and privilege to introduce James Henry, Jim Henry, to his friends, which he has a lot of. He's an international tax expert. I always tell people that if you're a labor union and the owner of the mine or mill where you work or factory has absconded with the payroll, you call Jim Henry and he will help you put a boot on the yacht in whatever forgotten Caribbean backwater the miscreant capitalist has disappeared to. He's effective, and he's involved with so much. You name the issue, he's been there. And then, of course, Jennifer Coffey is the executive director of the New Jersey Association of Environmental Commissions, which exists throughout New Jersey to try to keep an eye on land use and other environmental issues. So I know we're running a little bit behind. So that's my down and dirty Reader's Digest version of both of these spectacular guests.
Great. So, all right. Let's, Jennifer, you want to tell us a little bit about ANDEC?
Wonderful. Thanks for having me this morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. Yeah. So, ANDEC, happy Earth Day, everybody. It's great to be here with you. Thanks for having this special show today. And ANDEC is the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions. We have been around for, oh goodness, about 54 years at this point in time. And our role is really to help municipal officials in New Jersey in the 565 municipalities that we have, to make better decisions about the environment for their communities. We primarily work with environmental commissioners, so 5 to 7 volunteer municipal officials on a board that advise their elected officials and nice. Their land use board members. And we are thrilled to be here today to talk about whatever your listeners would like to chat about, whatever Ken and Bob would like to chat about.
All right. So most towns in New Jersey have environmental commissions?
We have about 350 established environmental commissions in New Jersey, and there's good coverage.
Give that number again.
About 350.
Wow, that's great.
We've got a lot of municipalities in New Jersey, and so we've got ECs, you know, all the way from the tippy top of New Jersey down to Cape May and everywhere in between. And they are very busy this weekend out there hosting Earth Day events, and they're really busy, you know, at all times of the year. These are your citizen volunteers who are organizing stream cleanups, park cleanups, who are working on restoring trails, who install community gardens. We have a small grant program at ANJAC. We're thrilled to provide support to ECs throughout the year. We'll be making announcements on those grants in a few weeks of who's getting a little bit of seed money this year to do some good in their communities. But really importantly, ECs also review site plan applications, so plans for development and redevelopment. And they are the ones that really have their eyes on the environmental impacts. So air pollution, water pollution, soil pollution, impacts to species, impacts to forests, looking at climate resiliency. So they're really focusing on advising your land use boards on how they can make these applications better. And even more importantly, what you can do to change local laws to make sure that your officials are making good decisions for healthy and resilient communities in New Jersey.
That sounds great. Is it really happening? I mean, people can advise a politician to do something. It doesn't mean they'll do it.
Yeah, that's true. Environmental commissions in New Jersey are advisory only, although we'd like to host some conversations about what it would look like to advance the law on that, since it hasn't been substantially revised in about 50 years. And quite frankly, New Jersey is the state that is experiencing most acutely the impacts of climate change. And I say that with some reservation and respect for the people in Florida this week who received an enormous amount of rain and are really flooded out of their homes and businesses and suffering terribly. But we are experiencing very acute impacts of flooding in New Jersey. We just have too much water, except, of course, for when we don't have enough of it and we see drought as we did last year. It's pretty dry this year. It's not looking great. And unfortunately, the climate impact and the flooding also has an impact on water quality, so that in our streams and our rivers. So we've got too much water except for when we don't have enough of it, and a lot of it's too dirty. So we do need to look in a more serious way at making mandatory requirements and infusing the advice of environmental commissions in a more elevated way because of the impacts that we're experiencing here in the Garden State.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
This is Jim Henry. Thanks for having us on this morning. Who is George Norcross?
You know, that name sounds familiar.
Well, tell us a little bit more about him, because he's the executive chairman of Holtec, the company that just threatened on February 2nd to dump 1 million gallons of radiated water into the Hudson River, and then on April 4th decided to step it up to May 4th, which gave us almost no time to stop it. Fortunately, we got, you know, dozens of officials and 440,000 people, ordinary folks, to sign a petition to stop it. We got the county commissions in Westchester and Rockland County to denounce it. We got these two bills in the legislature to stop it. And now we're organizing to mount a continuing action, because this is not over. But George Norcross, I discover, has been on the board of Holtec. He's a very powerful guy in southern New Jersey. His brother is a congressman. His other brother is the lawyer for Holtec. He provides a lot of insurance to municipalities through his insurance company in southern New Jersey. He's just a power broker that nobody's ever heard of, except that he's on the Democratic National Committee. He's one of the reasons Holtec has so much power and influence in the Biden administration, which just got a $7 billion grant, sort of loan, to build small modular reactors across the country, something that no one has ever heard of here except us now. They're on the march. They're actually doing a lot of work in the Ukraine right now. They've got support to, try to get a nuclear waste dump in New Mexico. That was just blocked by the governor of New Mexico. We came within inches of blocking this thing on the Hudson. But they're also busy up in Massachusetts at the Pilgrim plant in Plymouth, Massachusetts, where they tried to dump 1 million gallons of radioactive waste in Cape Cod Bay this year. And so this is a company that really needs more examination. It's privately held. And I'd love to know whether George Norcross, owns part of it. I'm sure he does. But he seems to be deserving of more scrutiny by the environmental commissions in New Jersey.
Yeah, I will say that, Anjak, first to start off, I don't have the pleasure or mispleasure, depending on what side of the fence you're on, of knowing Mr. Norcross. I don't believe I've ever met him. And I will also say Anjak is a 501c3 nonprofit, so we don't engage in politics. We believe the environment is and has shown to be a bipartisan or nonpartisan issue. Of course, there's an asterisk of, unfortunately, the anti-science or denying science set that we seem to have among us with a growing voice, unfortunately. And environmental commissions really focus on local projects and their own communities. We don't, unfortunately, have environmental commissions in New York, at least not ones that I'm aware of and that we support because we're a New Jersey-based organization. So we focus on New Jersey, and then ANJAC really takes what we're hearing from environmental commissions in those 350 or so municipalities across the state with ECs, and we listen to the common threads of things that they're struggling with and then elevate that to state-level conversations in the legislature, the governor's office, and with our DEP. And so one of the issues that we worked on very strongly is the reduction of plastic pollution, which has a strong connection to fossil fuels and to climate change and to environmental justice. And we are thrilled that we're coming up on the one-year anniversary on May 4th. So we'll have a webinar. If you check out our website, anjec.org, that's anjec.org, to talk about how it's going where we're going next, what our next steps are. But I don't know George Norcross. Sorry, and I don't know what I can do.
I think you do have a big nuclear power plant that Holtec as the decommissioning job for in Oyster Creek, which is in New Jersey.
Yes.
Near Toms River.
They're going to try to do the same thing there that they've been doing with Indian Point's three reactors, where there's 1,500.
They've actually done it already. They've dumped a lot of water at Oyster Creek.
And they're going to continue to have a problem with the storage of nuclear waste. This is a gift that keeps on giving. But I think that the issue for New Jersey is that the last time I looked, the Hudson River does flow next to New Jersey. It affects the fish. It's a permanent, irreversible dump. It's now turning out that, contrary to decades of propaganda from the NRC, that even low-level radioactive waste like tritium has long-term effects on genetics of animals and humans. And we have you know, all kinds of evidence of that. So I think what
the term low level is very misleading. Because when people talk about tritium in the water, that's radioactive hydrogen, and it ends up being the H of H2O becomes radioactive tritium. So wherever water evaporates, there will be radioactive tritium with it. And once it gets into your body, it's wrecking your health.
If it gets into the body, and the fish eat it, and then they you know, all the lower level organisms that are eaten by the fish, and so it's multiplied up the food chain. No, but I think the idea is that I love the idea that New Jersey can get organized around this. I just want to put this issue on the agenda because it's really affecting your neighbors as well as yourselves here.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And we're certainly going to look at, you know, any impact, any dumping of radioactive material or irradiated material is of tremendous concern. We saw the impacts of the tsunami on the Japanese nuclear plants. And anything that's planned is certainly going to be of concern, and we will work with our North Jersey and our New York partners. You know, we're not that far away from each other. I'll be in the city in a couple weeks.
And New Jersey that's great. I mean, I think Holtec also got a $260 million tax subsidy from the New Jersey Development Fund. Governor Murphy was complaining about that, but I'm sure that Norcross had a role in that. He got a lot of other subsidies for his companies based in Canada.
That was a Christie era. That was a Christie era swag bag treat.
The Norcross brother, who's the lawyer, helped make that happen. And then when the Murphy administration complained about it, it was reversed briefly, but I think it finally got pushed through again. So, you know, they have evergreen connections, it seems.
I mean, one of the things that is important here to point out is that, as Jennifer was alluding to, one of the benefits but also a challenge is New Jersey has these multiple municipal madness kind of thing. There's so many jurisdictions, and on top of that, there's 21 counties. And I know that the whole question of economic development authority loans and grants is a huge question. And just to Jennifer, I know that you folks have been very helpful because you've networked me with it. It's not like you guys are not dealing with corporations, particularly the warehouse movement that tries to blow right through New Jersey, whether it be Amazon or built on spec. And so I'm wondering, like, is there not a need? Has there been a conversation, to Jim's point, about how much the EDA is actually meeting and advancing a progressive climate agenda? I mean, that's a valid point. Is how much of that money that is going to lift up corporations might be actually undermining our long term planetary interests?
So, Bob, thanks for asking the easy questions again. certainly. Yes. I mean, is it breaking news today that there is big money that is investing in anti-climate resilient development in New Jersey and really across the country? I don't think so. That's longstanding, and that is something that we fight against. And we're appreciative of shows like this who will look into those connections. The important thing is to really work at the grassroots level, and I think that's what this show is about, you know, bringing those grassroots voices to engage, because that's the only way we have ever seen a difference be made, at least here in the United States. We saw a real revolution of thought and connection between the environment and health around the first Earth Day in 1970. And so just before the first Earth Day, we started to get some national environmental policies. And throughout the 70s, we got the Clean Air Act, the Clean Drinking Water Act, the Toxic Substance Act. We've got lots of open space passed and adopted and preserved. And we have not had any new nationwide environmental regulations since 1980. We've had some updates nationwide regulations. But we haven't had anything new. And we are now looking at tremendous impacts to development, particularly when you look at New Jersey, you look at New York, you look at Massachusetts, because we're in this high traffic corridor. We are surrounding now the busiest port in the nation. The port of New York and New Jersey is the busiest port. So your next day delivery of anything you want, your sheets, your water bottle, your filters, your, you name it, you know, that's coming through that port. And so we've got tremendous pressure for warehousing. We've got tremendous climate pressure because of the way we have released greenhouse gas emissions. And it really is time that we are responsive to, I think, what is a renaissance, a regeneration of awareness from citizens about the impact of the way we live and our environment on our daily lives. So I do think we are seeing some more pressure, and it's up to organizations like myself and many, many, many others who are out there to really bring that to government and to hold their feet to the fire to make change.
And you're listening to Ecologic on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. We're usually on from 6 a.m. until 7, but today we have a two-hour special in honor of the Corporate Earth Day, because every day is Earth Day. We say that every week. But the corporations have managed to tell everybody on mass media that Earth Day is for kids to pick up litter. And they've totally gone away from clean air and clean water and wildlife and all the real environmental issues that upset the people who buy ads on mass media.
WBAI. Like no radioactive waste dumping. There's one. Put that at the top of your Earth Day list.
Yeah, it's there's a lot going on the grassroots level, as Jennifer was just saying. And you're not going to hear much of it on mass media. You have to listen to WBAI. And my name is Ken Gale, and my co-host is?
Sally Gellert.
And today we have a guest co-host. Bob, reintroduce yourself so people know who you are.
So I'm Bob Henley, at Stuck Nation and Twitter, because we surely are. I am a... career labor journalist, was with WNYC until I left over a labor beef, right for Salon, Insider NJ, Work Bites. My book, Stuck Nation, Can the United States Change the Course of Its History, Choosing Profits Over People, published by Democracy at Work, has a great foreword by my friend and colleague, Professor Richard Wolff. And of course, just from the commerce end of things, if you call in and support this wonderful program, I will personally send you a copy, an autographed copy of my book, Stuck Nation, if you sign up as a WBAI buddy for this wonderful and essential program.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you, Bob.
That was not rehearsed and spontaneous.
No, it wasn't. It's a surprise to me. Now, we haven't heard that much from Jim. Jim, talk about what you have to tell us about what Holtec is doing.
Well, I'll give you a little background on me. I'm an attorney and an economist. I've been a longtime activist on the issues of global inequality. In this area, I've had a lot of history with organizations that have been concerned about nuclear power in our neighborhood. The Northeast is hosting something like 20 of the 93 remaining operating nuclear power plants in the country. And so it's created a lot of situations because we never solved the environmental waste problem.
Right.
You know, we have 1,700 metric tons of nuclear waste stored at Indian Point. That's 30 miles from New York City. You know, there's a ton of stuff over in Millstone, Connecticut. We mentioned Oyster Creek. These are all, you know, terror targets waiting to happen. So
yeah,
they have in addition to whatever environmental disposal, I mean, sort of leakage they have of the waste that's there, they're so sort of active, attractive nuisances for potential targets. So these are issues that have been working on for a long time. But what I was astonished to find this year was this suddenly Holtec coming out of the blue to make these announcements about, you know, our precious water body, the Hudson. And it turns out that there is this big business that Holtec as a private company has glommed onto, which is we have all these nuclear power plants in the country that are being taken out of service, decommissioned. So they go around. There's already funds that taxpayers and ratepayers, people who pay electric bills, have put aside. In the case of Indian Point, three reactors, there's a $2.1 billion fund that already exists. In Pilgrim, it's $1.1 billion. Oyster Creek also has a fund. So what these guys do is they go and they basically buy the plant. Holtec has purchased the Indian Point reactors, and then they get access to the billions of dollars that have been put aside, and they get to spend that over time. Of course, they also sell their own storage products. So it's to do this, and you know, no one really has much visibility into how they're spending the money. In this case, one of the reasons for the rapid discharge is that they simply didn't want to spend the money to do any of the alternatives, one of which would be to leave this wet storage on site in double-lined tanks. Tritium has a half-life of about 12.3 years. You know, it's got to be there for much longer than that. But
so about 120, 130.
Yeah, well, it's it's at least 100 years that it should be there.
Give or take a decade.
Yeah, give or take a decade. But you know, the amazing thing was that the environmental groups, I have great respect for outfits like Riverkeeper and Clearwater. And all the other groups that have come out of the woodwork here. But they were caught by surprise by this announcement on February 2nd. They've been basically divided. Riverkeeper gets money from the DEC, and they've never been really opposing nuclear power. On this tritium issue, they've been standing up to oppose the dumping, but the agreement that they – you know, helped to negotiate with the DEC and the NRC over the dispatch of this reactor to Holtec is pretty weak compared with the one that they've achieved up in Massachusetts. So anyway, our governor in New York has also been, unlike the governor in Massachusetts, also been, surprisingly unhelpful here. Governor Hochul is running to catch up when it comes to opposing this dumping. She did manage to find $2 million to spend on hiring a couple consulting firms back in January to prepare her vision statement for the state of New York.
And she's taking money from ratepayers to keep nuclear plants upstate New York open.
Yeah, $7.6 billion for those two dinosaurs. That could have gone to solar power or green power or just building a smart grid in the state, which we still don't have.
Yeah.
That's another whole program. But you've got
it has been, yeah.
The corporate Democrats, who are basically still kind of very close to Wall Street and controlling, the upper echelons of state power are, very eager to give $11 billion to a Abu Dhabi-owned chip plant and taxpayer subsidies, but they've found it very difficult to do much for the environment. Anyway, on this nuclear issue, she's running to catch up. We've been hoping to get more support for a thorough look from the Department of Environmental Conservation,
Jim,
at what's going on here.
Yeah, I wanted to know if it's possible you did some investigation into the financials of Holtec, and that's the thing that you pointed out to me. Because they're not publicly traded, the level of disclosure is troublesome, and yet they're also, though, a vendor. They've been involved with some troublesome things in the past. I understand that they were debarred for at some point. for something to do with the TVA. And then when they came to New Jersey to get their payday from Governor Christie through George the Fixer Norcross, they didn't disclose that they've been debarred from doing government work. Can you talk about how much redaction there is and the lack of transparency about the structure and the tax treatment of this company?
Well, it's interesting. Holtec is not a company. Usually you would go on the SEC website. It was out at 10K. You'd get public statements and audits of what their financial condition is. In Holtec's case, it's owned apparently by two Florida trusts whose beneficial owners are just not clear. But the chairman of the company, the chief executive of the company, is based in Florida. And as I mentioned, George Norcross is on the board. They do seem to be kind of a big sprawling enterprise with a lot of employees and divisions. They have a security unit in Camden that has more than 260 people doing, sort of monitoring government information. That's one of the more
sounds like
things.
A clandestine service to me.
They have contracts. Let's just put it this way. They have contracts with the Navy to store waste. They've been hired at places like Chernobyl to do waste management. They are, very active in selling their own dry cask storage units. One of them, there's a litany of stuff to be said about Holtec, but I can't possibly do justice to it. Yes, there's been some cover-ups of bad behavior, but, I think the big picture is we would love to know much more about Holtec than we do, and we really need to have the state of New York insist on hearings where all of these issues can be exposed and it can be explored so the public is better informed. I think that's the first thing.
When they buy up these nuclear reactors, they luckily don't get total control over the decommissioning fund immediately. There are certain regulations on what they can do with that. But their goal is to do this as cheaply as possible because anything left over, they get to keep.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of their strategy.
And then they move the storage if they get New Mexico to agree and store it forever in their site that they get paid for perpetuity.
Well, this is the original sin. You know, the government, federal government, promised us the moon when they started this off on this peaceful uses of atomic energy way back when. My law partner Victor Yannicone, who did the Agent Orange case long ago. Actually, in 1969, the Atomic Energy Commission had a project to do a 40-kiloton detonation of a nuclear weapon in Colorado underground in order to use it for fracking. And you want to talk about tritium releases. So he was able to go in and sue and get that stopped. This is an industry that's ever busy. We now have this legacy that the federal government never followed through on its promise to the states to find a way to store all this on-site waste in some deep depository like they've done in Finland. The people of New Mexico didn't want it. Suck a mountain. That's not happening. So we have all over the country, we have these distributed sort of terror targets. And, it's not a situation that has an easy solution, but certainly the solution is not to dump into the Hudson River.
I'm wondering, as a practical matter, if we could loop Jennifer back in to see if it's not possible that at least the environmental commissions that have proximity to the Hudson River could at least insert themselves and make inquiry and make sure that there is a bioregional approach and that we have witnesses west of the Hudson paying attention to this process.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Bob, and I appreciate the assist with getting in. It's a lively conversation this morning. It's great. And I think we will certainly be working with our nonprofit colleagues and certainly looking at the extent to which ECs are able to engage with, at a bare minimum at the beginning, additional disclosure of information. Because, you know, as Jim is pointing out, the more information you have, the better armed you are to engage in conversation and decision making and better policy. When these things move fast in a cloud of you know, dust or darkness, it's impossible to engage and get better decision making. So slow down the process. Let's get some information out there. And by all means, yes, absolutely, tremendous, tremendous concern about dumping any irradiated material in the Hudson or any of our waters. Our waters are already too dirty, and this is, let's just stop doing stupid stuff.
I would say that I have spent a career identifying the fissures between the two states when it comes to jurisdiction. One of the things that forever I will hold against Chris Christie was when he was head of the Republican Governors Association. He took all kinds of six-figure contributions to the fossil fuel industry and Exxon, and then let them off the hook for a once-in-a-generation natural resource damage assessment, which could have transformed the Hudson County waterfront and brought back, in Essex County, brought back salt marshes, brought back the things that Standard Oil took away from the people and from the planet. And so this is an example. And as I did that research and walked the perimeter, went over to Staten Island to see what Newark Bay looked like from that perspective, I was amazed to find out that the fish advisories, Jennifer, you know this, I'm sure, are different. So somehow, if you're pregnant and you're thinking of going down and having a crab somebody caught for you, there's one standard in New York and one in New Jersey. Sorry to channel Lewis Black, but I haven't had enough coffee.
And what you're talking about with Chris Christie, really, that was an abomination to take natural resource damage funds and rather using it to repair the environment for the travesties that multiple companies, corporations, industries caused. It was used to plug the state budget, to plug a hole in the budget. And so to give tax cuts to, you know, wealthier businesses and wealthier individuals was done at the expense of the environment and health of communities. And it's the reason why ANJAC, under the leadership of the New Jersey League of Conservation Voters, was very supportive of the very next year getting a constitutional amendment on the ballot that requires NRD money, natural resource damage money, to be spent on the environment. Who knew we had to amend the Constitution in New Jersey to assure that money was spent the way that it was intended to be spent? But the voters said, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and adopted that. So we do have, we've got security measures in place now, but it was only because Chris Christie really did us dirty on that.
Let's take listener phone calls. It's 7:42 already. Before we take your phone calls for Jim Henry and Jennifer Coffey at 212-209-2877, we do need to remind you of how we keep the lights on and the music playing. It's all through donations from our listeners and members. We have a small studio in Brooklyn, a powerful transmitter tower in Times Square, and rent bills for each. We make it all happen with a small paid staff, a lot of volunteers, and surprisingly few dollars, but we really need those dollars. Without your help, it would be a dismal picture, but if we all pull together, we can do amazing things. There have been some great victories recently. North Brooklyn successfully fought an unnecessary pipeline, and the folks fighting the Mountain Valley Pipeline won in court. Those victories encourage those fighting corporate energy elsewhere. And how does the word get out? At least partly through Ecologic and WBAI. And with your help, we can keep the news coming. You can become a voting member for just a $25 donation. And with just $10 or $15 a month, your sustaining membership will help us budget our expenses to stay current with our bills.
I know we talk a lot about fundraising. We need to. We need you to help keep us going. WBI has always taken the time and made the effort to cover stories in depth. We can and do go beyond the headlines and press releases and even bring you eyewitness reports. For instance, Priscilla Grimm in The Last Hour. Because we are funded primarily by listeners, by you, not corporate advertisers.
If you appreciate our information, please show us you care about our show and about WBAI by giving a donation, getting one of our premiums, or even better, becoming a monthly supporter as a BAI buddy in the name of Ecologic. We appreciate you. Please help us to keep WBAI on the air. Call and contribute now. The donation number is 212-209-2950.
Environmental music is so important. A musician can say in 3 minutes what it takes any of us 15 or 20 minutes to say. And we have two Raging Granny CDs for a donation of $35 each. And a Raging Granny's DVD with rare video of a one-hour concert by Pete Seeger and the Grannies at the Clearwater Hudson River Revival for just a $40 donation. Last week, Mercy Van Black of the Raging Grannies Metro New York sang to us live on the air, and that's something you don't get often. You can find our Raging Grannies premiums and a couple dozen more at ecologic.wbai.org. Leave off the www to find something on an environmental issue that means the most to you.
And if you act now, I'll throw in my book, Stagnation, 212-209-2950.
Thanks. We see how Bob Henley's journalism helped drive national attention to East Palestine derailment, how our continuing focus on Holtec is building a groundswell of opposition to their profit-driven environmental destruction. And we know that it's important for WBAI to keep broadcasting, to keep providing a platform for those who would otherwise go unheard. And you can be part of that effort. A $25 annual membership, a $10 a month BAI Buddy subscription, or just a one-time donation today, which we would love to have you repeat at your convenience, makes you part of our team. Join us at ecologic.wbai.org or call 212-209-2950. We really appreciate it.
And we have three callers waiting on the line to talk to Bob or Jim or Jennifer, 212-209-2877. You're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, yeah. I can.
Yeah, we can.
Hi, buenos dias. This is Angel. I just want to give two shout-outs and two questions. One shout-out to Ecologic, Happy Earth Day. Another shout-out to Bob Henley, who's been on the front lines with us, retirees in New York City who are trying to get back our Medicare instead of the mayor pushing us to Medicare Advantage. Thank you, Bob, for that. First question is around the bioregional, perspective. Any issues we should be aware about in the New Jersey, New York estuary? And secondly, any issues around pharmaceuticals? Are they worsening in terms of pollution, or is that all cleaned up in New Jersey? That's one of my stereotypes about New Jersey and the pharmaceutical industry. So I'll listen off air. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you so much. And it's so important that we raise up the struggle of New York City retired civil servants who are being forced onto Aetna Medicare Advantage, a company that's acknowledged its role in underwriting slavery, is under investigation by the Department of Justice, and you might say has the Holtec model when it comes to your health care. That's right. Aetna Medicare Advantage. We get money from the CMS Medicare folks in Washington and charge them for how sick you really are, and then we make money on the back end by how? By reducing access to you to the critical care oncologists you know you need. That's us, Aetna. So as far as what's happening with the pharma folks, one of the things that I'm sure Jennifer is well aware of, Jim is aware of, we've had in New Jersey and around areas that have the pharma business, this situation where we have trace elements of things like birth control showing up in the ambient groundwater. And so it does require more scrutiny. As far as estuary issues, I would say that it's. I do not believe that New Jersey and New York are cooperatively managing the risk threat matrix that climate change presents. And you can see that with the development where they insist on building expensive, high-rise, luxury buildings right in the area that should be left in its natural state that the ocean wants back.
Well, right. in the case of the Hudson River, certainly the dumping of radioactive waste into the Hudson will not help the endangered species like sturgeon and striped bass and you know the other fish that survive in that four-state confluence there. The point about
they keep talking about tritium. You know, there's a lot more other radioactive isotopes
right.
that are far worse than tritium that are contained in this wastewater. The fact is we don't even know because they haven't published any of the testing that they've done on what's in the wastewater. In Pilgrim, they discovered that there were 11 isotopes in the wastewater.
And we've run out of time. It's just amazing how quickly I think James Henry and Jennifer Coffey and Bob Henley could have gone another several hours. They have so much information and so much knowledge, and it's. Well, we have to end sometime. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Bob, for joining us on Ecologic today.
Thanks. It's great. Keep up the struggle.
And some upcoming events. I'll let the Decommissioning Oversight Board know what you think about Holtec's plans to dump radioactive wastewater into the Hudson. You can call in on April 25th and 27th. We'll put something on our website.
Yeah, and on April 27th, they're actually going to have a rally before the meeting at 4:30 outside the Cortland Town Hall. Meeting starts at 6. And follow that up at the rally to oppose Holtec's dumping of radioactive wastewater into the Hudson on May 6th on the river at Cortland Park in Verplank, New York, just off Route 9 and south of Peekskill. Bring your kayak. Donna will be on the water, our co-host, or just join the folks on land.
The La Plaza Cultural Community Garden is celebrating Earth Month Convergence Weekend today and tomorrow, 22nd and 23rd, from noon until 6 p.m. Southwest corner of East 9th Street and Avenue C in the East Village. East 9th Street, Avenue C. There will be talks, interactive activities, including herb walks and making seed bombs, and presentations both in person and some on Zoom about land rights and environmental justice around the world. East 9th Street, Avenue C.
Our own Ken Gale will be speaking at the Earth and Water Day celebration hosted by Paul Sladkus's Good News Planet in Times Square today from 11 to 4. And Ken is expected to talk at about 1:20 or 1:30, televised live.
And the New York City Labor Quarters Paul Robeson concert is next Saturday, April 29th. Information is on their website, www.nyclc.org. NYCLC.org, and Westpac has a memorial to its founder, Connie Hogarth, next Sunday, April 30th. See their calendar at westpac.org/events. Our tribute to Connie was on March 4th last year. Westpac, WESPAC.org/events.
Well, thanks for joining us this morning. And for more information on the May 6th protest, keep listening to Ecologic and go to our website, www.ecoradio.org. We'll have information from the links today from Priscilla and Stop Cop City there as well. That's ecoradio.org, ecoradio.org.
We're always glad to have you with us for Ecologic at 6 a.m. live or on the archives. Join us next week, April 29th. Check our website for details.
Our website information is on a variety of environmental topics, and we love to stay in touch with you. So those of you online, please go to ecoradio.org and sign up for our email list. Those of you on Facebook, please like our page. Enter eco-logic.
To become a member or contribute monthly as an Ecologic BAI buddy, call 212-209-2950 or go to our website and get one of our premiums, ecologic.wbai.org. Leave off the www.
Most of the WBAI staff, including us, are volunteers. WBAI is community radio, and there are lots of ways to get involved. And, of course, we always need your donations. We need your contributions to support everything that makes a broadcast happen. The engineers, electricity, equipment upkeep, rent. Pledging now during this show really helps Ecologic especially.
Our thanks to our special co-host today, Bob Henley, and to our engineer, Sean Rhodes. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Ken Gale.
And I'm Sally Gellert. We hope that Donna will be back live with us again soon. Join us next week on Saturday, April 29th for Ecologic at 6 a.m. Check our website for details.
See the sun, how bright it shines on the nations of the earth.
All who share this thing called life celebrate each day's rebirth.
So
you're tuned to 99.5 FM WBAI in New York. The special edition of Ecologic came to you live over listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI in New York. Coming up at 8 o'clock is Any Saturday with David Rothenberg. So please stay tuned.
Hi, this is Julian Gioiello, and I'm a listener and supporter of WBAI. I'm a student at NYU, and I live in New York City. And I want to shout out to the other young listeners of WBAI. We have to help keep the station going, and the easiest way to do it is through the WBAI Buddy System. If you donate as little as $10 a month, you have proactively promoted free speech radio. Go to the website, WBAI.org, click the donate button, and make a difference.
I'm David Rothenberg. I joined up with WBAI not long after Marconi discovered the wireless. If you tune in on Any Saturday, that's the name of my program, you'll hear some good music, commentary covering politics, theater, movies, books, and a word or two about the criminal justice system. Actually, it's whatever's on my mind. And there's usually a guest or two to liven things up. Good start for the weekend, so I've been told. Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m. Oh, and I often have tickets for Broadway and off-Broadway shows. You can get to see a play and support listener-sponsored BAI at the same time. I'm looking forward to you stopping by. I can hear you listening already.
Oh, baby, let's have a party.
Let's have a party.
Let's all begin.
This is Bob Law with what I think is an important announcement. I will be on the air for an additional hour, now from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. A little more time, a lot more ideas and information. So join me on Saturday morning from now on for 2 hours, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. right here at 99.5 FM WBAI New York.
Mr. Hoffman, have you had any change in your personal philosophy since Chicago?
I began to see what had been called democracy in this country in a new light. Underneath, it was really a police state.
David Schwimmer stars as Abby Hoffman in the Chicago conspiracy trial. Taken from the 1968 courtroom transcripts this week on WBAI Playhouse.
I began to see it in a way that black people and Puerto Rican people and Indians and I suppose all of the minority groups in this country, in fact, the way the Vietnamese people were seeing it, that it was a police state based on brutality. And there was a facade that protected it, that gave a semblance of some kind of debate, of some kind of democratic type decision making. But then underneath it was the police state, and that could only be protected by sheer police power.
8 p.m. Saturday evening, WBAI Playhouse on listener sponsored WBAI New York.
Abby, you know, died and evidence is overwhelming.
Where have all the flowers gone? No.
He's cool. He's exciting.
This dude is bad.
He's sexy. Okay, maybe not. He's a bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
He's Tony Ryan on WBAI New York 99.5 FM. He's got both.
Right here with the sound of the trumpet.
Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
He's got classic soul. He's okay. I can't think of anything else.
I'm Tony Ryan. Tune in Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Soul Central Station.